Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation on the 12th Hour in Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is May 10, 2014, or it is this 12, 2018. We will start our first service on this Sabbath day with a song entitled, Anywhere with Yahshua I Can Safely Go. Anywhere with Yahshua I can safely go. Anywhere he leads me in this world below. Anywhere without him there his joys would fade. Anywhere with Yahshua I am not afraid. Anywhere, anywhere, there I cannot know. Anywhere with Yahshua I can safely go. Anywhere with Yahshua I am not alone. Other friends may fail me, he is still my home. Though his hand may lead me over dreary ways, anywhere with Yahshua is a house of praise. Anywhere, anywhere, here I cannot know. Anywhere with Yahshua I can safely go. Anywhere with Yahshua I can go to sleep. When the gloomy shadows round about me creep, knowing I shall waken nevermore to roam. Anywhere with Yahshua will be home, sweet home. Anywhere, anywhere, here I cannot know. Anywhere with Yahshua I can safely go. Typology number 6, let's go on, keep on with 12 symbolic code number 2. We're on page 19. Going to do a little review. Okay, it says that Isaiah 66:17, they that sanctify themselves and purify themselves in the garden behind one tree in the midst eating swine's flesh, and the abomination and the mouse shall be consumed together, says Yahweh. Those who pose as Christians but obey not the laws of the Elohim shall be consumed. Verse 18 and 19, Isaiah 66. For I know their works and their thoughts. It shall come that I will gather all nations and tongues, and they shall come and see my glory. And I will set a sign among them, and I will send those that escape of them unto the nations, the Tarshish, Pul, and Lud, that draw the bow to Tubal and Avan, and to the isles afar off, that have not heard my fame, neither have seen my glory. And they shall declare my glory among the Gentiles. The Yahshua is going to come and slay many who claim to be sanctified but are not obedient unto the truth. Those who escape will go to the nations that have not heard the truth. Let us discuss for a few moments what it is that seals Elohim's people as a whole, as a body. You recall that in the days of Joshua, the whole nation fell in defeat before their enemy. Then Joshua prayed, and Elohim revealed unto him that there was a sinner in the camp, and that unless he were found and removed, Israel would never stand before her enemies. This illustrates the fact that it is the removing of the wicked from the midst of the church that seals it, makes it able to live on. You see then that the church's danger lurks behind the hypocrites that are in it. For this reason, the winds are held until the first fruits are individually sealed, and when all the sinners have thereafter been removed, there will remain only the righteous, thus leaving a sealed church, a holy people, that Elohim can put his angels round about to protect, seal, against any molesting thing, and they are the men who have escaped the slaughter, constitute the servants of the Elohim, whom he shall send unto all the nations to proclaim his glory. Isaiah 66:20. And they shall bring all your brethren for an offering unto Yahweh out of all nations, upon horses, and in chariots, and in litters, and upon mules, and upon swift beasts, to my holy mountain, Jerusalem, saith Yahweh. As the children of Israel bring an offering and a clean vessel into the house of Yahweh. Do you not see how the work will be finished? It can be finished in no other way than by a church containing only holy people. In the words of Isaiah, they will bring all their brethren out of all nations in a clean vessel, meaning a clean church, and when they bring in all their brethren, it will result in a great indebting of the souls. That is why there will be 144,000 leaders to start with, instead of only 12. Isaiah 66:21. And I will also take of them for priests and for Levites, saith Yahweh. That those that are gathered, Elohim will take some for priests and Levites. That is what will swell the force unto 200 million horses. Their riders are the angels. Workmen whom Elohim thus describes would fear nothing, for they too will receive the seal of the protection that will make them invulnerable to death. Now you should be able to see what a great people Elohim is to have. Is it displeasing to Elohim for any to urge his people to study the Bible, to obey his truth, that they may become the great people he has pictured them to be? Can it be? If it is not, then shall we be just like walls through which nothing can penetrate? I am sure that if we are Elohim's people, we will be responsive unto the revelation of his truth, and we will earnestly set ourselves to the business of knowing his will and obeying it, that we may be his people. Men like that will not talk empty of vain things, but their words will instead be powerful, like fire smoke and brimstone. And speaking of fire, where there is smoke, there is also fire. Since smoke ascended out of the bottomless pit, fire must have been in the pit. And as fire and smoke and brimstone issued forth from the mouths of the horses, what can it represent but the spirit of Elohim, the gospel of Yahshua? Is not the spirit of Elohim a number of times represented by the fire? The smoke fittingly represents a complete sacrifice burned by the fire, consumed by the Holy Spirit. Have we yet made up our mind to sacrifice all, to be all for the Elohim and none for self? Not meaning of course that we must torture ourselves. For our closing thought, we should remind ourselves that the 144,000 are without guile in their mouth, and the Bible says that he that overcomes his tongue is a perfect man. Are we ever guilty of uttering statements before checking them for accuracy, for justice, for necessity of the telling, for the edification? Let us learn to speak the right thing at the right time and in the right place, having learned that we will have us become heroes, for it is a fact that for at least some people to gain the victory on this point, they will have to make what will seem to be the supreme sacrifice. Let us not speak evil of other people. Let us not speak discouraging, disheartening things. Always remember that persons who speak thus invariably betray their own low spiritual condition. Okay, now that's the end of number 2 of 12 Symbolic Code. We're going now back up to 12 Symbolic Code number 1 and continue on. It says, the chronological order and explanation of some of the Isaiah chapters. This is a study given by the Vidyadhara for March the 14th and June the 30th, 1942. And he had a prayer authority, said the message we have to bear is not a message that men need cringe to declare. They are not to seek to cover it, to conceal its origin and purpose. Its advocates must be men who will not hold their peace, day nor night, as those who have made solemn vows to Elohim and who have been commissioned as a messenger of the Yahshua, as stewards of the mysteries of the grace of the Elohim. We are under obligation to declare faithfully the whole counsel of the Yahweh. We are not to make less prominent the special truth that has separated us from the world and made us what we are, for they are fraught with the eternal interest. Elohim has given us light in regard unto the things that are now taking place in the last remnant of the time. And with the pen and voice, we are to proclaim the truth unto the world, not in a tame, a spiritless way, but in the demonstration of the spirit and power of the Elohim. For the mightiest conflicts are involved in the furtherance of the message, and the results of its promulgations are of the moment to both heaven and earth. For the controversy between the two great powers of the good and evil is soon to be ended, but to the time of its close there will be continual and sharp contest. We should now purpose, as did Daniel and his fellows in Babylon, that we will be true unto principle, now come what may, for the flaming fiery furnace heated seven times hotter than it was wont to be heated, did not cause these faithful servants of Elohim to turn aside from the allegiance unto the truth. They stood firm in the time of the trial and were cast into the furnace, and they were not forsaken of Elohim. The form of the fourth was seen walking with them in the flames, and they came forth not having even the smell of fire upon their garments. Today the world is full of the flatterers and dissemblers, but Elohim forbid that those who claim to be guardians of the sacred trust shall betray the interest of the Elohim's cause through the insinuating circumstances and devices of the enemy of all righteousness. There is no time now to range ourselves on the side of the transgressors of Elohim's law, to see with their eyes, to hear with their ears, and to understand with their perverted senses. We must press together, we must labor to become a unit, to be holy in life and pure in the character, that those who profess to be servants of the living Elohim no longer bow down to the idols of men's opinion, no longer be slaves unto any shameful lust, no longer bring a polluted offering to the Yahweh, a sin-stained soul. Testimonies of Ministries, page 470. All right, end of the prayer thought. Let's go right on into the study now. Our study for today is taken from several chapters in Isaiah, particularly chapters 12, 13, and 14. Some of these chapters contain prophecies which are illustrated by the certain experiences of the ancient peoples and nations which at the same time were to be repeated. We shall now commence our study with only a brief review of what we have already found in chapters 7 and 8, because our time is limited and you are all more or less familiar with it. First is mentioned the history of the ancient Israel's unsuccessfully confederating with Assyria against the Judah, for they could not prevail against her. Instead, both were taken by Assyria. Then follows the prophecy of the birth of the Emmanuel. Since, however, Yahshua was born long after the kings of Israel and Assyria were taken, it is obvious from verse 16 of chapter 7 that a circumstance was to occur at some time that would be the antitype of the confederacy which took place anciently between the Israel and Assyria against Judah, and that in this antitypical period both kings represented by Assyria and Israel would be taken by a power represented by the Assyria before the Emmanuel would know the difference between the good and evil. Since has already been pointed out, Yahshua, the Emmanuel, did not live in the time of such a confederacy. It must be that not only Israel and Syria and Assyria are types, but Yahshua himself is also a type. We learn that Emmanuel, meaning Elohim with us, could represent only his true followers, the born-again Christians. Okay, now the true followers, born-again Christians, they are the genealogical descendants of Isaac, David, and the not born-again, the Mahershala Hasbaz, that was born first before Emmanuel was born in Isaiah's allegory. He was from the seed of Ishmael, the seed of also Esau, which is from the seed of Ishmael. And they were of the house of Esau. The Pharisees were of the house of Esau, sitting upon David's throne in Jerusalem when Yahshua was there. Through these scriptures and historical facts, we learn that the antitype of Israel and Syria's confederacy took place commencing in the 1st century A.D., when one part of the Christians, Israel, federated with the pagan Syria against the other Christians, Judah, but the combined church-state power was broken by the Protestant nations, Assyria, after the Emmanuel born-again Christians came, but before they had advanced in the truth far enough to know how to choose between good and evil, and before the younger Christians, represented by the second son, Mahershala Hasbaz, of chapter 8, had progressed enough even to know their father, Elohim, and their mother, the true church. After Isaiah mentions the ancient historical confederacy and then the sign of the Emmanuel, which we have just reviewed and applied unto the experience of the early apostolic congregation of the house of Esau, sitting upon David's throne, ruling over Judah and the land of Judea. So the early apostolic church history, Isaiah 8:9. Let's read that again. After the Isaiah mentions the ancient historical confederacy, and then the sign of the Emmanuel, which we have just reviewed and applied unto the experience of the early apostolic congregation's history, Isaiah 8:9, warns against another association of the people, saying that this confederacy will likewise surely fail and fall to pieces. And for us, this is the main lesson in these chapters. We are instructed as to what to expect and what to do about it. For the period we are now in is in the antitypical Assyria. The Assyrian period is about to pass away and the period of the Babylon to be ushered in. But there is another thing that is to happen between the setting up of the confederacy of the Isaiah 8:9 and the rise of Babylon. It is the setting up of the Elohim, the everlasting kingdom of the David here on this earth. Elohim's people are to be taken into their own land and made free. In the outline of the chapters, we find this order. For the seventh chapter brings the birth of the Christians and the federation against them. The eighth chapter brings in the latter-day confederacy of the peoples and nations and the outcome of it. The ninth and tenth chapters contain the continuation of the antitypical period of the Assyria and her fall. The 11th chapter brings the setting up of the kingdom of the Elohim. The 12th chapter expresses the praise of those in the Zion in the kingdom. The 13th chapter brings in the burden of the Babylon. Okay, originally you recall we studied the 10th chapter of the Isaiah and found that this chapter brings us into the time when the period of the antitypical Syria is to come unto its end. For we might naturally expect Babylon to follow next, because that period comes after the fall of the Syria. That is not correct, for the Yahshua's kingdom, which is the everlasting kingdom of David, must also come in its proper time. That is, the child, as his people, when they have become mature, born again Christian. The burden of the Babylon, therefore, is not mentioned until the 13th chapter of the Isaiah. Now we may ask ourselves why the symbolization of the government of Elohim's kingdom as given in Isaiah 11 is in the form of the rod and the branch and the root. Other figures might have been used that would be just as fitting, but Elohim chose these. Why? It must be noticed that the 11th chapter starts with the word and showing that it is a continuation of the 10th chapter. Now let us read Isaiah 10, verse 33 and 34. Behold, the Yahweh of the Yahshua of the host. Let's do that again. Behold the Yahshua as the master of the host shall lop the bow with terror, and the high ones of the stature shall be hewn down, and the haughty shall be humble. He shall cut down the thickets of the forest with the iron, and Lebanon shall fall by a mighty one. Isaiah 11:1. And there shall come forth a rod out of the stem of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots. For the people are illustrated as trees. For the Yahshua is first to take out the people that are clean into the land, and then as a branch shall stand. In other words, one sit is to be taken out completely, and a new sit is to stand in his place. The land of our fathers, Palestine, then will be clean from all the wicked and wickedness, and Yahshua's people will be there with Yahshua's principles and influence ruling over them. You see, then, that these chapters are arranged in their correct order and put in other terms. It can be said that when this association of the Isaiah 8 is urged, the leopard-like beast of Revelation 13 is about to pass off, and the other period represented by the scarlet-colored beast of Revelation 17 is about to come on the stage of the action. With the fall of the Assyria, the land of the promise is also prepared for the Elohim people to come and there set up a place for those who are to be called out of the Babylon to come where they are neither sin nor sinners. Those are Elohim's plans. The rest of chapter 11 describes the condition of the Elohim's kingdom and the way his people are brought there, and continuing on with the praise of the righteous in the kingdom, chapter 12 commences with the word and. Let us read through this chapter and make a few comments as we proceed. Isaiah 12:1. And in that day thou shalt say, O Yahweh, I will praise thee, though thou wast angry with me. Thine anger is turned away, and thou comfortest me. In the church purified Yahshua's kingdom described in the preceding chapter, Elohim's people will praise him, though he had been angry with them. When was he angry with them? When he had to use the Gentile nations to disperse them because of the rebellious and idolatrous ways. When they are brought back into the kingdom and are comforted, then they will understand all of Elohim's dealings and will praise him for it. Isaiah 12:2. Behold, Elohim is my salvation. I will trust and not be afraid, for the Yahweh Elohim is my strength and my song. He also has become my salvation. This is the testimony of the Elohim's people will bear in his kingdom. Isaiah 12:3. Therefore with joy shall you draw water out of the wells of salvation. Okay, now it says, now the Yahshua speaks. When Elohim's people are safely and peacefully situated in the land of the promise, when they bear their testimony of the faith and trust in the Elohim, then Elohim says that they will, with joy, shall draw water, truth, out of the wells of salvation. Isaiah 12:4. And in that day shall you say, praise Yahweh, call upon his name, declare his doings among the people, make mention that his name is exalted. For the 144,000 will do this very thing when they go unto all nations. Isaiah 12:5, sing unto the Yahweh, for he hath done excellent things. This is known in all the earth. All the earth is to know of the Yahweh's excellent things. Isaiah 12:6, cry out and shout, thou inhabitant of Zion, for great is the Holy One of Israel in the midst of thee. 144,000 standing on the Mount Zion with the Lamb will cry out and shout for joy. How plain it is that Elohim is about to do a great thing in the earth that all will know about. Before this message came, we were unable to place all of these events, but how clear they are now. We already learned that with the fall of Assyria, Elohim sets up his kingdom, and then Babylon comes on the stage of the action. Okay. Therefore, the burden of the Babylon is mentioned in the next chapter, which we shall now study. Isaiah 13:1-2. For the burden of Babylon, which Isaiah the son of Amoz did see, lift ye up a banner upon the high mountain, exalt the voice unto them, shake the hand, that they may go into the gates of the nobles. In the presenting of the burden of the Babylon, Elohim first commissions his own people to lift up a banner, meaning that they are to make known what they have. They are to exalt the voice or message by the letting it do for them what it ought to do. Elohim's people, the 144,000, are to do this for those in Babylon, who will constitute the great multitude of Revelation 7:9, that they may go into the gates of the nobles. For the Bible declares that it is at Mount Zion where the nobles will be. For the gates and nobles would indicate territory and rulers, showing that the Elohim's everlasting kingdom of the David at that time is in existence. And it is this everlasting kingdom of the heaven that is set up with the house of David, with Yahshua sitting upon the throne of David, leading the way as of the tribe of Judah, the lawgiver. And Yahshua is this lawgiver that the sincere will go when they leave Babylon, the world, in the time of the image of the beast. Isaiah 13:3. I have commanded my sanctified ones. I have also called my mighty ones for mine anger, even them that rejoice in my highness. For the two groups are here mentioned. Number one, his sanctified ones, his sanctified ministry, and number two, his mighty ones, the unfallen angels. In other words, he is here telling us that he is recruiting his church and his angels for his anger. Isaiah 13:4. For the noise of a multitude in the mountains, like as of a great people, a tumultuous noise of the kingdoms of the nations gathered together. For the Yahshua of the host musters the host of the battle. Who is the host of the battle? That's his great army, his battle axe, Jeremiah 51:19-20. For the Joel, speaking of this event, says that the heathen will be brought to the valley of Jehoshaphat, where the Yahshua is afterwards to judge them. When this happens, it is a great day of the Yahshua. Isaiah 13:5. They come from a far country, from the end of heaven, even the Yahshua and the weapons of his indignation to destroy the whole land. Yahshua also comes. We have seen in these first five verses of this chapter the description of the Elohim's army, which is to destroy the whole land. Isaiah 13:6. How ye, for the day of the Yahweh is at hand, it shall come as a destruction from the Almighty. For the day of the Yahweh is at hand, and the Yahweh is telling you and me to howl even now because of it. People can know only what they are told. Therefore the command comes to howl, for certain destruction is coming. It is at hand. Isaiah 13:7-8. Therefore shall all hands be faint, and every man's heart shall melt, and they shall be afraid. Pangs and sorrow shall take hold of them. For they shall be in the pain as a woman that travaileth. They shall be amazed one at another. Their faces shall be as the flames. A great and sudden surprise is coming unto the nations, and all who are unbelievers shall faint. For the great day of the Yahweh shall suddenly bring trouble and destruction that they are not expecting. Isaiah 13:9, Behold, the day of the Yahweh cometh cruel, both with the wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate, and he shall destroy the sinners thereof out of it. For the day of the Yahweh that had to lay the land desolate and destroy sinners out of it. Isaiah 13:10, For the stars of the heaven and the constellations thereof shall not give their light. The sun shall be darkened in his going forth, and the moon shall not cause her light to shine. This verse gives the signs that are to precede the final great day of the Yahweh, Isaiah 13:11-12. And I will punish the world for their evil and the wicked for their iniquity, and I will cause the arrogancy of the proud to cease, and will lay low the hardness of the terrible. I will make a man more precious than fine gold, even a man than the golden wedge of the Ophir. At this time, Elohim's people will be without guile and perfect in his sight, and therefore more precious than fine gold. Isaiah 13:13-14, Therefore I will shake the heavens, and the earth shall remove out of her place, in the wrath of the Yahweh of the host, and in the day of his fierce anger. It shall be as a chaste roe, and as a sheep that no man taketh up. They shall every man turn unto his own people, and flee every one into his own land. Every man turn to his own people, and fleeing into his own land does not mean that they will migrate into their native land. It shows separation which every man must choose, whether he will go to the land of the righteous and be with the righteous people, or whether he will choose to dwell in the Babylon, where, according unto Zephaniah 5, all wickedness is to be carried. After that, there's three chapters in Zephaniah, so we have a correction to make there. According to Zephaniah, probably Zephaniah chapter 3, verse 6. I have cut off the nations, their towers are desolate, I made their streets waste, that none passes by. Their cities are destroyed, so that there is no man, that there is none inhabitant. That would be more than likely be it. Zephaniah chapter 3, verse 6. Alright, let's go on to Isaiah 13:15. Every one that is found shall be thrust through, and every one that is joined unto them shall fall by the sword. It will indeed be a terrible, a cruel day for those in Babylon. Isaiah 13:16. For their children also shall be dashed to pieces before their eyes. Their houses shall be spoiled, and their wives ravished. This is the work of the wicked men, and happens when finally the ten horns of Revelation 17:16 shall destroy Babylon the Great. Now those ten horns are represented by our Congress and Senate at Washington, D.C., because they represent all, they're the lawmakers for all of this nation and for all of the world. They're the ones that give their power, have power 1 hour with the beast. And it says they turn on her and eat her flesh and burn her with fire. That's the ten horns of Revelation 17. Let us go on. Isaiah 13:17. Behold, I will stir up the Medes against them which shall not regard silver, and as for gold, they shall not delight in it. What happened unto the ancient Babylon is a type, and what is to happen to modern Babylon, the horns, or heathen nation, will destroy her. There it is right there, the horns. Her gold and her silver will be of no consequence unto them. Isaiah 13:18-19. Their bows also shall dash the young men to pieces, or their bows, and they shall have no pity on the fruit of the womb. Their eyes shall not spare children. And Babylon, the glory of the kingdoms, the beauty of the Chaldees' excellency, shall be as when Elohim overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. Wow! Babylon is going to be utterly, utterly destroyed. Babylon will never rise again. Isaiah 13:20. It shall never be inhabited, neither shall it be dwelt in from generation to generation. Neither shall the Arabian pitch tent there, neither shall the shepherds make their fold there. If Babylon the woman on the beast of Revelation 17 is extended over much of the earth, and at her fall is to be left with no inhabitant, it would suggest the period of the millennium. It is true that when the millennium begins, the whole world goes down, but that is not in the period of the Babylon. The millennium comes after the falling of the plagues, the wrath of the Elohim. The verse we are now studying is talking about Babylon. The ancient capital city of the Babylon fell in the top and is not in the existence today. Therefore, in the end time, whatever modern Babylon is, her capital city is likewise to come down. Isaiah 13:21-22. But wild beasts of the desert shall lie there, and their houses shall be full of the doleful creatures, and owls shall dwell there, and satyrs shall dance there. And the wild beasts of the island shall cry in their desolate houses, and dragons in their pleasant palaces. And her time is near to come, and her days shall not be prolonged. Elsewhere in the message, it teaches that Babylon will rule about 1 hour, and this verse says that her time will not be prolonged. We have come unto the end of the 13th chapter, and the next verse starts with the word for, indicating that it is a continuation of the 13th chapter. Isaiah 14:1. For the Yahweh will have mercy on Jacob, and will yet choose Israel, and sit them in their own land, and the strangers shall be joined with them, and they shall cleave to the house of Jacob. For the Elohim is doing this all because of his mercies on the Jacob of the two kingdoms. For the kingdom of the Elohim and the kingdom of Babylon, Elohim will destroy the latter and save the former forever. For the Elohim will have mercy on Jacob and Israel and sit them in their own land, Palestine. Heaven could not be their own land yet, for Jacob and Israel have never been there. Moreover, if this were speaking of the period on the other side of the millennium, it could not speak only of the house of Jacob, for that would exclude Abraham and all the righteous who lived before him. And what strangers could be joined to the house of Jacob after the millennium? None. It is clearly evident from all these facts, therefore, that this verse applies before the millennium, before the close of probation, and that the strangers that are to join the house of Jacob could be only the Gentiles, which will constitute the great multitude of Revelation 7:9 and Isaiah 66:20. And Isaiah 14:2, and the people shall take them and bring them to their place, and the house of Israel shall possess them in the land of the Yahweh for the servants and handmaids, that they shall take them captives, whose captives they were, and they shall rule over their oppressors. This verse hardly needs explanation, for it plainly tells us that those who will then be taken as the captives will be under the rulership of those over whom they formerly ruled. Isaiah 14:3-4. And it shall come to pass in the day that the Yahweh shall give thee rest from thy sorrow and from thy fear and from the hard bondage wherein thou wast made to serve, that thou shalt take up this proverbs against the king of the Babylon and say, how hath the oppressor ceased, the golden city ceased? This is what we're going to say to Obama, because he's the king of Babylon today. And this is going to be the house of David that's going to ask him, how hath the oppressor ceased? He's definitely an oppressor. He's definitely an oppressor, and he's oppressing the whole world. Now that is, in the day that the Jacob's bondage under the Gentiles has ended, let's do that again, and the day that the Jacob's bondage with the Gentiles being ended, and the day that the strangers have joined themselves unto the Jacob. In that day, Jacob will take up this proverb against the king of the Babylon, and this Jacob is antithetical Elijah, David. And the king of Babylon is Obama. And here's what antithetical David will say to Obama, Barack Obama. It's Isaiah 14:5-20. For Yahweh hath broken the staff of the wicked and the scepter of the rulers. He who smote the people in the wrath with a continual stroke, he that ruled the nations in the anger, is persecuted and none hindered. Obama is ruling the nations right this very day. He's ruling them in anger. For the whole earth is at the rest and is quiet, for they break forth into the singing. Yea, the fir trees rejoice at thee, and the cedars of Lebanon sing. Since thou art laid down, Obama, Barak, no fellows come up against us. Hell from beneath is moved for thee to meet thee at thy coming. It stirreth up the dead for thee, even all the chief ones of the earth. It hath raised up from their thrones all the kings of the nations. All they shall speak and say unto thee, art thou also become weak? Okay. Just review what I just read. Hell from beneath is moved for thee to meet thee at thy coming. It stirreth up the dead for thee, even all the chief ones of the earth. It hath raised up from their thrones all the kings of the nations. All they shall speak and say unto thee, art thou also become weak as we? Art thou become like unto us? Thy pomp is brought down to the grave, and the noise of thy vials, the worm is spread under thee, and the worms cover thee. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which did weaken the nation? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of Elohim. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the highest of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell and to the sides of the pit. They that see thee shall nearly look upon thee and consider of thee, saying, is this the man that made the earth to tremble? That's the United States. That did shake the kingdoms. That's all the kingdoms of the world. That made the world as a wilderness. That's the whole world outside the United States. United States included. And destroyed the cities thereof. That opened not the house of his prisoners. All the kings of the nations, even all of them, lie in the glory. Everyone in his own house. But thou art cast out of thy grave like an abominable branch, and as the raiment of those that are slain, thrust through with a sword, that go down to the stones of the pit, as a carcass trodden under feet. Thou shalt not be joined with them in the burial, because thou hast destroyed thy land, and slain thy people, for the seed of the evildoers shall never be renowned. For the antithetical kingdom of the Babylon, Barack Obama, is called Lucifer, because Babylon is an institution of the devil. Now, Barack Obama is a Hebrew name, and the definition for Barack Obama in the Hebrew is Satan. It's Lucifer, that's the name of Satan, Barack Obama in the Hebrew. Isaiah 14:21. Prepare slaughter for his children, for the iniquity of their fathers, that they do not rise, nor possess the land, nor fill the face of the world with cities. For the Babylon's expectation of what they will do will fail and reverse the destruction upon themselves, just as Haman's gallows at last was the instrument of his own destruction. Isaiah 14:22-25. For I will rise up against them, saith Yahshua of the host, and cut off from the Babylon the name and remnant and son and nephew, saith Yeshua, I will also make a possession for the bittern and pools of water, and I will sweep it with the basin of destruction, saith the Yahshua of the host. For the Yahshua of the host has sworn, saying, surely as I have thought, so shall it come to pass, and as I have purposed, so shall it stand, that I will break the Assyrian in my land, and upon my mountain tread him underfoot. Then shall his yoke depart from off them, and his burden depart from off their shoulders. Why is Assyria brought in at this point, when all through the chapter it has been talking about Balaam? For the reason, let us read the next verse. In Isaiah 14:26, this is the purpose that is purposed upon the whole earth. And this is the hand that is stretched out upon all the nations. Elohim is here telling us that what he will do with Assyria, he will also do to Babylon. He declares that he will surely do it, and we must not doubt it. Just as Elohim was able to lead his people into their land of the promise anciently, so he can now also today lead his people back and take them from their yoke and make of them a nation that shall never be given unto other people, but which will stand forever. Isaiah 14:27. For the Yahshua the host hath purpose, and who shall disannul it? And his hand is stretched out, and who shall turn it back? Who is able to tear down his purpose? His hand already is stretched out to do it, and none has power to turn it back. No one can stop it now. Isaiah 14:28. In the year that King Ahaz died, it was this burden. This gives the time Isaiah saw this burden. Isaiah 14:29. Rejoice not thou whole Palestina, because the rod of him that smote thee is broken. For out of the serpent's root shall come forth a cockatrice, and his fruit shall be a fiery flying serpent. Here the subject again changes, this time unto the Palestina, the promised land. Anciently, the rod that smote Palestina was Israel, who came into the land and became a nation of his own. But because for disobedient, Israel was broken down and scattered, and has remained so unto this day. For this verse tells Palestina, however, not to rejoice over Israel's broken condition, because something worse is coming upon Palestina. For we read this in Isaiah 14:30. And the firstborn of the poor shall feed, and the needy shall lie down in the safety, and I will kill thy root with a famine, and he shall slay thy remnant. It is the firstborn of the poor that shall feed and live in safety in Palestina. And Elohim says that he will kill with a famine the root of the heathen that are now planted there, and the remnant will he slay. He is utterly to clean out the land of all the heathen that are there, and give it unto his people. Isaiah 14:31. Howl, O gate, cry, O city, thou whole Palestina, art dissolved. For there shall come from the north a smoke, and none shall be alone in his appointed times. Palestina is to be completely dissolved. Through our study of the Bible, we have come to expect the heathen to be dissolved out of the Palestinian in the Assyrian period. For the whole Palestinian are dissolved, for there shall come from the north a smoke. Smoke does not creep along the surface of the ground, but travels through the air. And as the smoke comes from the north, the phrase suggests that the aerial attack will be waged against her from the north and pass on to the south. It will mean that those who now possess Palestina will lose out. The last phrase, and none shall be alone in his appointed time, means that they will not be alone, for others will be with it in his appointed time. Isaiah 14:32. What shall one then answer the messengers of the nation, that the Yahshua hath found a Zion, and the poor of his people shall trust in it? This tells how Mount Zion at the 12th hour is going to be founded, for the Yahshua is to accomplish it. From all appearances, it looks as though we are very, very close unto the fulfillment of these prophecies. Only one thing hinders it, and that is that we have not finished our work. Had we taken the message of the warning unto the church, this could all have been finished by now, for the nations are all ready. Elohim will hold it until we get our work done. Another thing that is certain is that it is for our good, whatever happens, and whosoever wins, if we are followers of Yahshua in the Spirit and in the truth. That ends the 12 symbolic code number 1. Let's back all on up now to 11 symbolic code number 12. We have about 8 minutes to go on this study, and we're going to get into the kingdom of heaven likened unto 10 virgins. And this is the June 8, 1946 sermon by the V.T. Hardiff. And it says, the prayer thought, it is a law of the mind that it gradually adapts itself unto the subject upon which it's trained to dwell. Well, let's just get right on into a regular study. We'll forego the prayer thought. We're going to get into Matthew 24:42-43. Some brother is that was visiting Victor Hallett back then has asked me to give a study on the kingdom. And with Elohim's help, I shall endeavor to do my best to bring out certain facts on that subject. Let us turn to Matthew 24:42-43. Watch therefore, for you know not what hour your master doth come. But know this, that if the good man of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. Now we know that we're talking about the prophet. We're talking about that slothful servant there in Matthew 24 that made the statement that the master today is coming and begin to eat and drink and with the wicked. So he was cut asunder and pointed him his portion with the hypocrites. Okay, he said, these verses convey the idea that no one knows the day and the hour of Yahshua's coming, and therefore Yahshua admonishes his people to be ready at all the time. Then he draws the illustration that if a certain one knew that a thief would attempt to break into his house at a certain time, he would certainly watch for him. But the fact is that no one knows exactly when a thief will enter. Now it says there in Thessalonians, I believe it's chapter 1, Thessalonians 1 verse chapter 5. It says, but you brethren not in darkness at that time, for you know perfectly well that the Son of Man shall come as a thief in the night. But the thing is, you are not in darkness at that time. You are children of the light. Walk while you have the light. Alright, he says these verses convey the idea that no one knows the day and the hour of Yahshua's coming. And therefore Yahshua admonishes his people to be ready at all the time. Then he draws the illustration that if a certain man knew, but we didn't have that, Matthew 24:44-45. Therefore, be ye also ready, for in such an hour as ye think not the Son of Man coming. So then, who then is a faithful and wise servant, whom his master hath made ruler over his household, to give them meat in the due season? This implies that there are certain conditions that must be met by those who would be called faithful and wise servants. They must be given meat in the due season. Matthew 24:46. Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he cometh, shall find so doing. We as a denomination, as a Seventh-day Adventist, should be able to reason out the lesson that is in these verses. According unto verses 45, the Yahshua has made someone ruler over his household. Who would that be in the Elohim's church in the denomination? If we are to attain, attach this to someone, it would necessarily be attached to the president of the General Conference, who heads all the work. And of course, since his responsibility is spread throughout the churches and shared by the ministry whom he directs, it follows that they are all included in what the Yahshua is saying here. That is the only thing that it could mean. Isaiah 24:45. Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his master hath made ruler over his household to give them meat in the due season? Well, that question is asked. We know that this is antitypical David, that's his faithful and wise servant. Should not meat in the due season be a message from the Elohim, especially addressed unto his people and applicable at that time? Another name for meat in the due season is present truth. So then, the servant is to give his household present truth. Matthew 24:46. Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he cometh, shall find so doing. If our application is now right, that this is a speaking unto the denomination, the Seventh-day Adventist Church, just prior unto the Yahshua's coming, and that would be having speak to, that be speaking then to the Gilead Center in 2002, because that's exactly when Yahshua invisibly came to the threshold of the house and took account of what was going on and taking place there, and he took the reins in his own hand, and he cut off that slothful servant, Matthew 24, and appointed his portion to hypocrites, and he changed the guard from antitypical King Saul to antitypical King David, and then he continued on the 12th hour with the everlasting kingdom of David being set up. Now where the tribe of Judah now that is ruling instead of the house of Esau, Mount Edom ruling, the antitypical Pharisees, we are now the house of David is in charge. And then it goes on to say, then we must understand that Elohim wants his servants to give unto his household meat in the due season until he come. Matthew 24:47. Verily I say unto you that he shall make him ruler over all his goods. This verse implies that Elohim has not as yet made his servant ruler over all his goods. No, because his servant hadn't been called yet and was set up. But when he proves true by attending unto his business of the faithfully given to his household meat in the due season, until Yahshua comes, then Elohim is going to make him ruler over all his goods. That is the promise. And Vitihadus thought he was his servant that was going to accomplish it. Matthew 24:48-50. But and if that evil servant shall send his heart on master the day of his coming, shall begin to smite his fellow servants and to eat and drink with the drunken, the master of that servant shall come in a day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he is not aware of. And he, Brother Johnson, and none of your Davidian people were aware of the 12th hour. They could only count 11 on the parabolic time clock, and they could never reconcile number 12 as being a whole hour. They just said, when the clock strikes 12, that's the end of everything. Okay, this brings a close. I stood this hour. You can contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archive. Share this message. We're going to close now with a song. The Stranger of Galilee. In fancy I stood by the shore one day of the beautiful murmuring sea. I saw the great crowds as they thronged the way of the Stranger of Galilee. I saw how the man he was blind from birth in a moment was made to see. The lame was made whole by the matchless skill of the Stranger of Galilee. And I felt I could love him forever. Oh, so gracious and tender was he. I claimed him that day as my Savior, the Stranger of Galilee. His look of compassion, his words of love, they shall never forgotten be. When sin sick and helpless, he saw me there, this stranger of Galilee. He showed me his hand and his riven side, and he whispered it was for thee. My burden fell off at the pierced feet of the stranger of Galilee. I heard him speak peace to the angry wave of that turbulent raging sea. And lo, at his word are the waters still, this stranger of Galilee. A peaceful, a quiet, and holy calm now and ever abides with me. He holdeth my life in his mighty hand, this stranger of Galilee. Come ye who are driven and tempest-tossed, and his gracious salvation see. He'll quiet like storms with his peace be still, yea, stranger of Galilee. He bids me to go and the story tell, what he ever to you will be. If only you let him with you abide, this stranger of Galilee. Oh, my friend, won't you love him forever? So gracious and tender is he. Accept him today as your Savior, this stranger of